Today is Transitions Tuesday on Mind Talk. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Transitions Tuesday, we focus on all things related to the many different kinds of transitions we all have occasion to experience in our lives.
Very often we talk about transitions that are somewhat uncomfortable, but today's conversation is a transition that is absolutely delightful. I am very pleased to introduce you to Dr. Deborah Sandella, who is author of Goodbye, Hurt, and Pain, 7 Simple Steps for Health, Love, and Success. And wouldn't we all like to learn how to transition from hurt and pain to something very different? Dr. Sandella, welcome to Mind Talk.
Oh, thank you, Pamela. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's get started with the beginning. You are described as a person who wears an exceptional number of hats. A school teacher, a psychotherapist, a coach, a human potential trainer, a university professor, an author, and originator of the RIM method. Now, that's not all of the hats that you wear, but I'm most curious about the RIM method. What is that?
Right. Well, REM, R-I-M, stands for Regenerating Images in Memory. And it's a very quick, short technique to be able to really dissolve pain that is hurt and pain that's stuck in the body.
Well, that kind of sounds like magic.
I know. It sometimes feels like that.
Oh, well, okay then. Now, you begin your book with a comment about your mom, which I thought was so delightful and so important and something that many of us fail to recognize. You say that your mother taught you that you're never too young or too old to make a difference. What a delightful, important, true message.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. She's still alive. So she is an amazing woman, and she's been a great role model for me. That she came into the job market and late in life and then made a huge difference. And it's just been wonderful to see what a woman can do.
No matter the age.
Right, exactly.
So for those people who are listening or saying, oh, I can't change, I've been like this forever, I'm too old, that's not true.
Right, it's absolutely not. You know, that my mom really showed me. She became a hospital administrator late, like in middle life, and really stretched out into things that she had never done before. And all of a sudden, she was like a shining star. She garnered a grant that really saved the hospital, our local hospital.
Oh my.
And it was just amazing to see her go out and do these things that were way beyond her comfort zone.
What a wonderful role model.
Yes. Yeah, it was wonderful. So I have modeled my life after that. At my age, I'm still stretching.
Well, there you go. And actually, you come from several women of significance in terms of their impact on you. And I'm sure on all the people around them, your grandmother taught you that everyone owns a piece of wisdom, regardless of education and regardless of wealth. And that is also such an important piece of awareness for all of us to hold on to.
Yes. Yeah, my grandparents that came over from southern Italy, and my grandmother came over by herself when she was 16 on the boat and landed in, after New York, she went to Kansas. And, you know, it was amazing because she knew how to speak Italian, but she never learned how to speak or write, to read or write English. And when I discovered that, I was so shocked because I saw her as such a wise, intuitive woman that it's like I could hardly believe it.
So, again, there's always space for change, for growth, regardless of who you are, regardless of where you come from, regardless of your gender.
Right, exactly. So that, you know, there's so many excuses we can have to say, I'm not going to go after what I want or what I feel I'm born to do. And what I have learned from particularly these two women in my life is that that is really not true.
Well, let's talk a little bit more now about a man in your life, your dad. Just a few minutes ago, as you were describing the method that you've originated, I said to you that it sounded like magic. And you tell an amazing story about your dad. And if that didn't sound like magic, I don't know what does. Tell us about your dad. As the medical professionals told you he was dying, what happened?
Well, it was just an unbelievable experience. Really, you're right. It felt so magical. So I got a call in the middle of the night from my brother that my dad had had a cardiac arrest and that he was in ICU and that the nurses had called and said his blood pressure wasn't holding and they had given him every medication they could and they did not think he'd survive the night and they wanted permission for a no resuscitate. And when my brother told me this, you know, I reacted quite angrily, which was very out of character. And I said no. You know, it was like I couldn't understand. It was like all of a sudden it's like, no, this can't be happening. And as I hung up the phone and I started to walk back to bed, knowing I would fly to Kansas the next day, there was a image, a vision, whatever you want to call it, that just popped into my awareness spontaneously, where I saw my dad walking off toward the horizon, and I was there really being angry and yelling that I'm not ready, you know, for you to go. I'm so mad you're leaving. And then all of a sudden he paused and he stopped and he turned and he looked at me, and you know, there was a radiance in his face that and peacefulness that I had never seen in his face before. And he said, oh, okay, babe, I didn't know you felt that way. And in that moment, you know, all my anger just drained away, and actually my body went a little limp in my mind. I'm thinking, this is just in my head, right? So the next morning, I flew to Kansas, and when I walked into ICU, the nurses told me that his blood pressure had started holding in the middle of the night, and the epilogue is he survived and lived five more years that he and my mom said were really the happiest of their lives. So it was a very impactful experience. It really changed my life.
Well, you know, one can almost feel the chills as you're telling the story. I know there are people listening who are saying, that can't be true. She made that up. It's a coincidence. All the things that we tell ourselves when we hear about things that we don't understand. Say more about the impact of that experience and how you moved to creating regenerating images and memory, the REM method.
Well, I totally could understand how people would react that way, because at the time I was actually, I was teaching at the University of Colorado. I was a psychotherapist. I had had a psychotherapy practice for 20 years. I'd done research, and actually none of what happened computed with all I knew about medicine. And so it really challenged all that I had learned, all these many years of education I had been in, and how did this happen? And then all of a sudden, you know, what I was aware of is there is some power here. There is some ability here that I know nothing about, and I want to understand, that it became compelling. And I actually really, I closed my psychotherapy practice and began to focus on understanding what is this and how can we use it, because I didn't know what it was and I didn't understand it, but it was so powerful that it was what really mattered at that point in time. And, it, you know, of course, it changed my life, because after I closed my psychotherapy practice, I began moving in this new direction of uncovering different ways of exploring our emotional self through imagination, really, is what has come to be what I have understood. That's what I have uncovered, that there's such a power there.
You know, what's interesting is I hear you describing this and the power that it held for you. I kind of hear twinklings of your mom and your grandmom. After 20 years of being in practice, never too old, never too young, you closed your practice, and you looked for a new piece of wisdom, a new way of understanding the world around you. So it sounds like mom and grandmom were right there with you.
Oh, they really were. They were. Because it does take some intentional courage to say, I'm going to stop what I've been doing for 20 years. That's very comfortable. Felt like I was almost a honed instrument when it came to psychotherapy. You know, I really knew how to make it work. And then to turn and move in the direction of not knowing anything, really, is very humbling. It's a bit like starting over. And yet, looking back now, so that's been 20 years ago that I started this new journey, that it's like, oh my God, what it has brought me. I feel like it has kept me young. It has kept me learning and stretching. It's like it keeps causing me to learn and do things that I've never done before. And that has been so exhilarating.
And, you know, I hear the excitement in your voice, even as we're talking about it. So let's sort of drill down a little bit. Regenerating images in memory, using your imaginings, if you will, to free yourself. How exactly does this all work?
Well, one of the key things that I've learned, and neuroscience is really on track with it, and probably always has been, but we haven't taken neuroscience to the level it is now, is that the left brain doesn't do feelings. It analyzes, it has logic, it has verbal skills, but it doesn't really do feelings because feelings are too frustrating for the left brain. And so the key is to shift over into the creative right brain. And so I've learned some very easy skills and techniques to do that. Once we're in the right brain, we get to access the body, the unconscious, the intuition, a connection with life itself, like all of that becomes available to us.
Well, let me ask you this. We're talking about moving over to the creative side of yourself and really opening up, it sounds like, your own resources with respect to what's going on in your life and how you yourself can make a difference. Are there particular diagnostic categories that, psychologically diagnostic categories that this is more useful for than others? Or would you say this is something that everyone, anyone can try to access?
Well, there are a few, I would say, mental health diagnoses that I would not use it with. So anytime there is any issues with reality testing, so like somebody who's psychotic or maybe manic or bipolar, schizophrenia, those kinds of things are paranoia, and I'm talking about in the extreme, that I would suggest not use it because we will be really using an ability to imagine, and if there's any question about what's real or not real, then we wouldn't want somebody to play with it. But other than that, I would say it's really useful for anybody.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to sort of walk us through what this work could look like. And I'd like you to start with a story that you tell in Goodbye Hurt and Pain, which is the story of Chris the nurse. Can you tell us about Chris?
So help me remember, because I don't remember the names. There's so many stories in it. Is this in the very first?
This is in the very beginning.
Yes. So I got a call from Chris's husband that she was very depressed. She'd been on antidepressants for a while. Nothing was really happening, and she was so depressed, she really was not functioning. She wasn't able to continue to work anymore. She'd been a nurse manager. And so when she came in for the session, when we went into through her imagination, through the body, and so we're really using imagination and body sensing, to go back to the very root experience, what is this depression, the cause, the root cause of this depression, she landed back in a memory where she had been mountain biking with her husband, had had a spill, and had actually fractured her leg, taken to the hospital. While she's in the hospital, she starts to have a reaction, and she's thinking it's anxiety. However, it was an anaphylactic shock reaction. So her chest was tightening. She couldn't breathe. And she really went into a feeling like she was dying, because she was. That's what happens to the body in shock. And she began to be treated, fortunately, and recovered. So the anaphylactic shock was treated. She recovered. She went and had surgery for her leg. Everything seemed like it was going well. But this moment when she thought she was dying actually got stuck in her body, because it wasn't talked about, it wasn't acknowledged, it wasn't digested. So it now has, it's kind of like, you know, that old term, it's got stuck in your craw.
Yes.
Well, it was stuck in her craw. And so as we went back to that memory, we brought in some support for her. So she, through imagination, brought in her mother, through imagination, to be with her, and went down into the memory of being, feeling like she was dying and she was never going to see her children again. This was it. And as she was in that, she was able then to sit in it with her mother, being with her and comforting her. She sat in it until it evaporated, because that's how we're designed, is what I've learned, is when we actually sit in a panic feeling or an anxiety or a fear, that our own emotional operating system will automatically dissolve it. However, if we avoid it, we move away from it, we try to forget it, it gets stuck. So she was able to really dissolve that moment. And at that point, she was able to actually recognize she survived. But before that, because she was stuck in the terror of the thought and the feeling that she was dying, she couldn't emotionally appreciate she had survived that accident.
That is really extraordinary. Dr. Sandella, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, there are, as you might imagine, a few questions I'd like to ask you about the story of Chris the nurse. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk, and I'm having a conversation with Dr. Deborah Sandella, who is the author of Goodbye, Hurt, and Pain. We'll be right back. Dr. Sandella, well, let me say this before I even begin to talk to you about this. For those who are listening to our conversation right now and are perhaps driving as, or just out and about, as we talk more, Dr. Sandell and I, about the process that she has discovered and works with, I would ask that you, if you're out and about again or driving, just make the commitment to yourself not to try the exercises now, but when you get home or when you get to a safer place, you can just play this interview again. You will hear the conversation again in a safe place, and then you can perhaps try to do a little exercising of what Dr. Sandell is teaching us today. Dr. Sandell, with Chris the nurse, it just sounds so extraordinary that she was able to change her emotional self, to change her experience of depression almost in a moment. I mean,
right.
How, tell us more about how that works.
Well, as I was saying, the system, our emotional system is really designed to manage whatever comes up. However, what we haven't been doing is really understanding what is the root experience that's stuck. Because when we're talking about it, it's very hard to do that. Intellectually, neither she or I would have known that that was the moment, and we wouldn't have had access to the emotional root of it. So in this technique, we have created, or I have created, and I have students who now do that, I teach them, to uncover through body sensing, through the right brain, through imagination, the exact moment of terror that is stuck. And once we identify the moment of terror, then it's actually not that difficult to unwind it, to change it. And we know actually in neuroscience now, since 2000, that we can unlock a memory biochemically by remembering it. And then once it's unlocked, it can be changed. And then the new memory, however it's created, can then be resaved. So, you know, we're catching up. The neuroscience is catching up with all of this, which is very exciting.
It really is quite exciting. And one of the reasons why all of this is so important, as you referenced early on, is the negative impact, the negative physical impact of these depression, anxiety, all of these experiences that people have routinely, that there's such a negative impact on the body that it can actually certainly change the quality of your life, but in some cases it can shorten your life. So the
right.
Developing a way to stop hiding, if you will, from the things that have caused you pain and left you feeling stuck is a lifesaver.
It really is. In fact, I just need to say that, you know, I'm still learning. So this is just unfolding before my eyes, as well as everyone else's, because when I quit doing psychotherapy and I started moving in this new direction, I decided to set aside everything I thought was possible or impossible and to let clients show me what was possible. And I continue to actually be amazed at what can happen. So there was a woman who came in last year and she called and she said, I'm in stage 4 cancer and I'm dying. My husband has taken off work to be with me. And I'm not ready. I don't feel ready, so I want to do some work so I'll be ready. So she comes in, and she was doing some traveling, kind of that, you know, do whatever you want before you die kind of thing. So she came in, and she did about 4 sessions over about 5 or 6 months. They were spread out. And after each session, particularly the first one, her cancer markers went down. And she did, and I have to say, she totally gave herself over to the work emotionally and went back to some very critical times in her life that had stuck emotion, particularly with her parents when she was younger. And she just did the work. It was amazing. So by the time we did about the 4th session, she was so excited because the cancer was in remission.
Oh, my.
So it really, and you know, and again, there are no, you know, it's individual. Everybody's unique and it's individual. what we're finding both in the science and what I've been seeing in REM is that the mind and the body are so intricately connected that there is, it's so important to realize that the emotional work we do is also for our physical health as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you talk about this, and as I think about what psychotherapy is supposed to be about, this actually sounds like it is a form of psychotherapy. It's very different. It's new. It's powerful. It's certainly rapid. But to the extent that this and psychotherapy is about helping someone to free themselves of pain and move forward in perhaps a more joyful or deliberate way, it sounds like psychotherapy.
Right. Well, in a way, I would say that it is therapeutic. It is very therapeutic. I was very intentional when naming it to not use therapy because it's a very holistic model, so that we are operating from a knowing that we come into the world with a kind of wholeness and an integrity that you can see actually when you look into the eyes of an infant or a newborn that is satisfied, you know, has been fed, is dry, and is being held and loved, that when you look in their eyes, you see this wholeness and this kind of place of peace and love and joy just naturally. So we still have that. However, there are layers of life experience that land on top of that wholeness and become emotional memory that we sometimes confuse with who we are. However, it's not who we are, and that emotional memory can be changed, it can be cleared. So we really are still this whole person. So it's really a very different paradigm or model away from that we get broken or we need to be fixed. And I really was intentional that it felt really important to have this model to be holistic, because that's what I'm seeing, is the strength within people, the resourcefulness, the organic ability to be able to manage feelings in ways we haven't really understood before is natural. And it's right there. We just haven't understood how to use it.
It really is so extraordinary. One of the things that I notice is that you're not talking about medication as an adjunct. And you know we're living in a pill-driven society.
Well, that is true. And I would say every once in a while when somebody is biochemically depressed, there may be a very small percentage of people who will do a great REM session and it doesn't sustain between sessions. So whenever that happens, then I would refer somebody to be evaluated, and which is true like on many other kind of techniques as well, that if it is not sticking, if there's something in the body biochemically that's not able to really absorb the experience fully, then it's okay. However, I would say that's a very small percentage of people.
Interesting.
And most people can really have dramatic shifts just with a session or a series of sessions.
Well, let's talk about John. You tell the story of John early on in your book as well, and he was taking a great deal of medication. He was in pain more often than not. But then you describe him as making the decision not to medicate, but to essentially go into the pain. Why would anybody want to do that?
Well, John had rheumatoid arthritis, and so had, you know, pretty severe effects of it and was in a lot of pain. So as he did this work, you know, as he sat there and I guided him to actually sense in his body what part of his body was calling his attention and to begin to pay attention to it and move into it, then he learned what all of us can learn, which is that our bodies talk to us all the time. They just are not verbal. The body has a different language than the left brain. So the body does not speak in verbal understanding. However, when we move through our sensing, like body sensation, like pain or discomfort, and then we bring our attention back into the body and really move into it, allow it and welcome it, it is organically starts to be freed because it's been heard. It's almost like as if in the body there's the crying baby needing to be fed or changed or whatever, and when we ignore it, it continues to cry louder. And when we attend to that crying baby within our body, then it becomes quiet.
You know, there was a short sentence in the book that I will quote, and it seemed like such a powerful shift in the way people tend to think. You say that the, and I quote, "the essential function of feelings is to provide feedback and pass through us." And you and I both know that there are so many people who, when they are caught up in the emotion and the intensity of their feelings, particularly if experiences have been chronic, there's just a sense that these are our feelings. It's like a brick, you know, mm-hmm. it's almost like a boulder just sort of sitting inside of your body. And the idea that it is a perhaps what feels like a boulder, but it's there to inform and pass through. Even that concept, even that visual is freeing in and of itself.
Right. In fact, it is critical because the more that we allow that, I call it a river of emotion, because our body is experiencing emotion minute by minute by minute. We're really very dynamic, so it keeps changing. We keep getting feedback through the body. It's called interoception. And if we allow that and actually give attention to it, because we tend to not pay attention to how we're experiencing in our body, you know, we really get detached, we get distracted by the world. And when we allow it and recognize it, it automatically keeps flowing. And that's how we're designed. As you were saying, we're designed to have emotion. It's very transient. Emotion does not become part of us. It actually is just a transient state of awareness that passes through. However, that river of emotion, if we begin to resist the emotion, to be afraid of it, and to try and push it away or bury it or stick it in the closet, it's like creating a dam in the river. And we create a dam in the river, then that emotional water actually sticks around in our body. And so when we start to, you know, allow the dam to dissolve, create some floodgates so that it can be released, then we see immediate benefit.
And it's interesting that you would use the visual of a dam in a river, because we certainly know the kind of damage that water can do mm-hmm. over time, you know, as it's drip, drip, dripping and not attended to in a particular way.
That is exactly right, yes. Water is a good metaphor for emotion, because it seems invisible so much of the time to us. Emotion seems invisible. And, you know, culturally, we have had a fear of intense emotion. I mean, back in history, you know, we started with Adam and Eve and how one, you know, got into trouble by different actions, and we had guilt and all of that. And then Socrates talked about in his papers, he talked about how lust and anger are kind of like small emotions, so we should not have them. And so over time, historically, we have learned to feel, I think, that to have these emotions is to almost be a not a virtuous person. And that's really incorrect. That's misleading. And it's caused us to not explore our feelings more, but to be afraid of them. And because emotions feel so out of control. So when we say anger, it feels like, oh, God, this is so big and uncontrollable. So we get afraid of it. So then we try to get away from it. So that's the problem. So in this technique, what we have learned is when we actually go to the body and we find, let's say, that anger in the body, and we start to give it form by sensing through our creative imagination, sensing the form of that anger, and all of a sudden the anger becomes a small red ball that's hot, very hot, then we're working with something that the left brain can then join in and say, oh, I'll help you with that, because I can see that. So it's just amazing. So then when we start working with that image and defining it, going into it, and giving, asking for the root experience, then it becomes a very manageable process where we actually gain a sense of control, but in a very different way.
And, you know, the other thing that I notice about this process is that, you know, nowhere in here are we saying this terrible thing that happened to you is so-and-so's fault, and you must forever feel guilt, blame, shame, you name it, about this issue. This sounds like certainly a curiosity-based, very affirming, reminding us all that we have so much power within to heal so much of the pain that many of us carry.
Right, that is exactly right, that we have the ability within us to actually work through incomplete relationships where the person's not even available to be able to talk with. And so we can actually do that within ourselves and feel at peace with it. That's quite remarkable, because otherwise we end up feeling dependent that the other person has to be there or the other person has to say something, which is just, we know that's unrealistic because we can't control other people. And so to be able to have that resourcefulness and ability within us to really move into resolution and a peaceful place with it all by ourselves is so empowering.
Absolutely. I mean, there's almost a sense of joy even imagining it to be true. You know, for
right.
those who will allow us to allow ourselves to imagine that we can really do this.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, I have had some experiences where I was talking about the process. There was a young man who was interviewing me for a video, a documentary of some kind. And after we had completed, he said, can I ask you a question, a personal question? I said, of course. And he said, so I have this trauma that I experience, and I can just feel it here in my chest just like a ball. And is it possible for me to dissolve that? And I looked at him and I said, well, yes, absolutely. I have seen thousands of people realize that they are greater than any experience that they have had. And all of a sudden he gets this smile, his whole body, his whole presence shifted, and he gets this smile of confidence on his face. And I said, wow, you look really different. And there was another interviewer there. I said, take a look. Look towards her. And she goes, wow, you look happy. So I asked what happened, and he said, I have hope. And it was amazing to me the amount of physical difference in his body. He was a young man, so he was very open to his emotion in his body of experiencing it. And it was, I just loved seeing that.
You know, even as I read that that piece, you know, there was a big smile on my face, almost imagining how joyful and uplifted he was feeling just with the possibility of change.
Exactly, exactly. Which is amazing. It's like we have that potential. We have that organic ability within us. We don't have to talk ourselves into it. We just have to let ourselves feel our feelings, and then express in a safe way, and it starts to happen automatically.
When you say express in a safe way, say more about that.
Well, I think there has been a belief, particularly in psychology, that we have to talk to the other person, as I was referring to earlier. And that's not always safe,
right?
Because, it can escalate things. It may not move to resolution. And so that isn't that's not the first place to go, is what I've learned.
Exactly.
That the very first place to go is to do process within yourself, so that if you need to then talk to that person in real life, by that time, you're in a different place with it. But what I found is that very rarely does the person need to actually talk to the real person, you know, to the other person that's involved. That most of the time we can handle it within our own emotional process, because we no longer feel that urgency, because through our inner imagination and resourcing, we have come to peace with what happened. Now, some part of that that's really important, so I don't want to leave it at, is it is always important to have a voice. However, when and how we have that voice, we have choice. And there are places to have that voice that are not going to get a good outcome, and there's times it is going to be a good outcome. And so with the RIM method, we can do this in this way with ourselves. It's really safe.
And it's all about empowering ourselves.
Exactly.
Dr. Sandella, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we kind of left folks hanging out there with John and the pain he was in. So I want to come back and have you share with us what ultimately happened with John. We'll be right back. Dr. Sandella, we left John with very painful rheumatoid arthritis. What ultimately happened as he engaged in this process?
So what happened is he began to have less pain as he listened to the pain. So whenever he would have pain, he would pay attention to it, really, you know, move his attention or his awareness into his body, and sense, as he sat in it, really sense, was there a message here? And as he sat in it, then the pain would dissolve. And over time, it was probably about a year, as he consistently did that, the pain gradually lessened so that he really didn't have a need for the medication anymore. He was, at the time, when he first came in, he was medicating as much as he could and be safe. And then at the end, he was only using the medication as needed. And what he began to recognize was that when it was needed was usually when he was overdoing and was overextending himself and getting too tired. So he was really stressing his body. So what happened is he began to gain awareness of how certain ways he was being in his life were not serving him. And these just were insights and awarenesses that gradually showed up and informed him as he listened to his body. And so he began to eat differently, because he was very overweight in the beginning. He began to eat differently and to lose weight. He began to really get better rest and to listen to what his limits were so that he didn't overtire himself. So, and then he also, the one really important thing is he began to actually speak up more with his family and his employees when things weren't working. And that was something he had not been doing. He'd been really stuffing his anger before that.
You know, this process sounds like it could be quite helpful with folks who are experiencing any number of different kinds of trauma. You talk about a gentleman who came home from Afghanistan, which is traumatic in and of itself, and he did some of this work. Tom was the name you gave him. Can you share a tiny bit about the impact of trauma and earlier conflicts on Tom?
Right. So what happens is when an experience gets stuck in the body and does not get resolved, it almost becomes magnetic to cause a repetition of similar kinds of feelings. And again, this is all in the neuroscience that, you know, neurologically this happens. So when you have a trauma, and it becomes cumulative, actually. So when you have trauma with REM, we will go back to the very original source to dissolve that first trauma so that we really, what would you call it, demagnetize it, so to speak, so that it doesn't have that kind of attraction to repeated experience. So for Tom, he went back to high school where he and his dad were in constant conflict because he was his dad had come over as an immigrant from the Middle East and had particular values about what his sons should be like. And Tom was the youngest child, very charismatic, very outgoing, and had been raised in the United States. So he was being different than what his dad was expecting. So in this REM redo, so we call it a redo or regeneration, in his own imagination, he was able to go back to that experience in high school and actually speak to his dad and let him know how he felt. So instead of rebelling, he got to tell his dad how hurt he felt, because he felt like his, you know, he wasn't being approved of. He felt like he didn't feel good about himself. And in this redo, we can actually sense what the other person is sensing through empathy by moving Tom's awareness over into his dad. He discovered that his dad really loved him and thought he was an amazing young man. However, he was worried. He was concerned. He wanted to be a good father. And so in this dialogue that happened in this very deep place, like a very deep place in our awareness, in our imagination, we're very deep at that point, there was healing. It was just beautiful. So then coming out of that regeneration of that high school experience, when Tom looked at his Afghan experience, it looked very different because it was no longer looking through those eyes of someone who is failing or not quite cutting it. And so it really, then he could really perceive his whole military experience in a positive way, that he had actually done a good job and he had done exactly what he was supposed to. He'd been supporting the people in his troop and came home to a good life, a happy life. So it really reoriented his whole perspective on himself and his life.
When you're working with, when you're working with your clients and they have these amazing experiences, what's that like for you?
Well, you probably are picking up on that it's very energizing and uplifting. Because the skills in REM, and that's one of the reasons I don't call it psychotherapy, because we are facilitators. So we are facilitating the body and the organic emotional operating system of the client. So it's like we're walking beside them and with them, but we're not doing it. We're guiding, like we know the route, we know the trail to help them go where they need to go, but we're really not the doer. The client is, and their resources are the doer. So it is exhilarating because we get to see the client make these shifts so quickly and to gain benefit, yet we're not really responsible. We don't have to feel like the expert, like I have to fix somebody.
Gotcha. And it's got to be just amazing to be in that moment and just to see, as you saw with the young filmmaker, just to see that look on their faces change and just sort of the joy emanate in such a different way.
Exactly. In fact, we see the face and the body change after this work. So people look younger, they move differently, they hug differently. It's just amazing. They're not aware of it because this is an unconscious change. So there's no willpower here to be different. It all happens very organically. And I absolutely love those moments where they open their eyes and, bring all that the work that they have done, bring it into present moment, into real life. It's just so exciting.
Now, is this something that folks can do on their own? I mean, can someone pick up Goodbye, Hurt and Pain, read it and become an expert, or do they really need to have guidance by somebody who's trained in this method?
Well, I think that yes, people can pick up the book and learn to do it. And I do include activities at the end of each chapter that are simple activities. All the activities are simple. They're just things we haven't thought about before. So they may be out of familiarity. They may be unfamiliar, but they're not complicated. And the book is a great book to use as a group, like a book group or a group coming together to move through those steps together. And, you get to take turns being the facilitator, that kind of thing. Now, if somebody has experienced abuse in their life, then to go really, really deep, I would recommend they work with a facilitator.
Okay.
Right. Because it's like we don't want anybody to ever be too scared. We don't ever want anybody to re-experience trauma. And so if you know that you've had very serious trauma and what I would say is you could still use the book for the beginning places. And so what happens in the unconscious actually is, what I have found is generally the unconscious won't go any place it doesn't feel safe. So, for instance, I've done a group REM for a group of 200 people before, like when I'm working with Jack Canfield with his audiences. And what happens is the people who aren't really ready, which there's a small number, or they're not, or they need individual facilitation, fall asleep, or they just don't have an experience. Well, everybody else just has a remarkable breakthrough. So the unconscious does keep us safe. And so, I would trust that whatever is happening as you experiment with these, if you start to feel like you want assistance, then I would get that. However, there's a lot of very simple skills about breathing and how to feel your feelings, how to feel your body, how to express in a safe way. All those things can be utilized day to day to day in a very simple way without having to go back to the original experience of a trauma.
You were talking about the exercises, the activities in the book, and certainly you speak very clearly about the science that's connected with the process. And then, as you said, you give them exercises that they can actually do themselves very often to enrich the experience.
Right, exactly. Yes, and it really is amazing. Like I actually just last week also did a class with a group of people who are learning to be trainers, and I set them up to do a dyad with each other, and they had about 10 to 15 minutes to work with each other, and I was amazed at the breakthroughs that people had, primarily because we're actually using a different system than we're used to. So when we use the left brain, the logical system, things get they go a lot slower. And you're not really surprised because you've been thinking about it. However, with the REM system, your imagination will reveal things to you that are a surprise and open up a whole new avenue of what is the problem And then once the problem's identified, then we're going to deal with it at this new level of imagination and in the body. So it's amazing what can happen. It's just amazing.
So the folks who are coming to this don't have to have a particular religious perspective, don't have to have a particular psychological perspective, just really need to be open to their own personal experiences.
Exactly. That is exactly right. That's really all it takes. And we all can do that. We all have an imagination. We all have a body. And we all have the ability to tune into both of those.
It really is an exceptional process. Is there a place, I am sure folks who are listening are fascinated by the work that we've been discussing. Is there a website or a place where folks can go to get additional information?
Yes, you can go to goodbyehurtandpain.com to get additional information. And the book is available everywhere, so all booksellers.
So there are options, and there are more, and I know that there are also some resources at the website that perhaps would be useful for folks as well.
Right. Yes, there's many. I do give many resources on the website, and the website is the REM Institute, RIMInstitute.com.
All right. So RIMInstitute.com and
right.
GoodbyeHurtAndPain.com.
Correct. Yes. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Pamela.
Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing this fascinating work that you've been doing.
Oh, thank you, Pamela. You've been a joy. So thank you so much for having me.
All righty. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Productions. Remember that you can listen to Mind Talk online on demand whenever you choose simply by going to mindtalk.org, or you can go to iTunes and download the Mind Talk app. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, you can email me at Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at MindTalk, MindTalk.org. That's Pamela at MindTalk.org. And folks, I want you to remember always, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. Take care.